Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore positive. We are positively into just a glorious week here, right? Like, I hope weather, Preakness, all this going on. I mean, the PGA Championship's happening. People are watching that. NBA, NHL, Orioles baseball, NFL schedule. Even the Lexington Market crab races have been moved because of the weather to Friday afternoon. Luke and I, instead of doing Baltimore positive, they decided to have the crab derby like right in the middle of when I was going to do the show. So I'm just going to do the crab derby. I'm going to give lottery to, I'm going to have Pac-Man scratch offs to give away. It's going to be the best of everything, except I don't get to do my show, which might be better for some people, but I'm the MC, which might be a lot worse for a lot of other people, including BJ Surhoff. So come on down. It's always a good time. But if I hold up the crab derby, it's got the wrong date on it. It's not Wednesday the 15th. It's Friday the 17th. So come on down. Luke and I will be there, I don't know, around lunchtime, and he'll be the one stuffing his face with crab cakes and getting cucumber salad and mac and cheese, and I might have an ice cold beer because that's what I do. Because you're working and I'm just emceeing and having fun. How are you? We got an NFL schedule, right? We got a big horse race this week. Half of my contents, it's not dead. I'm gonna run it on the radio because I had Bob Baffert on. He had two horses. Now he has one. I'm not gonna be that guy because we talked about all sorts of history, Pimlico, and all that. But I apologize in advance for anyone that hears Donna Edwards talk about Muth winning the race or whatever. But the Preakness is holy to me, right, Luke? In a way that it's not for you. Your dad didn't get it. My dad didn't get it. But I always I had it in me, and I've had magical conversations this week. The Larry Kolmus piece, Chris Pike's ears are buzzing. Schwartz's brothers and cousins and nieces are like it. The Kolmus thing was unbelievably good. This is a special week in Baltimore for people who love horse racing.
I was just going to say, I mean, it's a big week for Baltimore anyway, and I think we'll see what happens in the future in terms of making it bigger, making it even more special. But even if you're not a horse racing person like me, you know, I've been the Preakness before, but it's not something I do every year.
Do you remember your Preakness you were at or no?
Yeah, it was 2011, I think it was. I feel like I'm.
You were too old or you didn't drink enough. If you don't have a Preakness, I'm going to say this publicly, you know, and I hope, you know, the walls have ears that'll be used against me. But, you know, if you don't have a Preakness you don't remember, you didn't do it right. I mean, I'm just saying, if you're my age, you know, like,
sure.
And I've admitted that this week freely. There are witnesses to this. God, I hope there aren't pictures. But, you know, Preakness is, it has been called by people my age a rite of passage this week. And I think that that's a glorious thing to talk about and talk about what the future could be. But Luke, dude, three Preaknesses ago, we all had masks on and we're here and they're shutting the race down. They're like, and the Orioles were owned by John Angelos and Peter was in failing. Like, and there's no baseball and there's no, I would say there's no hope. I think we all looked at Elias, but like to see the blossoming of the Orioles at this point, and that remains to be seen with fans and investment and signing players and what they're doing with television and digital and, like, you know, all of those, especially as the NFL schedule comes in. I'm like, what the hell's Paramount? That's not even three letters. Like, why do you why? Anyway, baseball. The baseball team this week, rain, not a lot of play. Not a lot of bats, right? But this is a blossoming for this baseball team that when everything goes wrong, they still win games. And I know you don't want to talk about the streak. I know how you feel about the streak.
Hey, if people want to ignore what happened in October, and that's what's most important, then God bless.
I want to point out that you are the optimist here. You're the nice guy of the two of us.
And my whole point with this streak and this obsession with it is there is so much to love about this team that we don't need to prop up something that, if we want to be totally honest, feels a little more hollow when you get swept in the postseason. I'll say this, however, when you look at what they've done against the American League East, which is now, they have not lost a series against another AL East team in 17 straight sets. That's impressive, right? That shows you what they've done in terms of taking care of business in this division. And, you know, we talked about it with the Yankees series a couple weeks ago. This is a Toronto team that's been scuffling. For me, easily the most disappointing team in the division to date. You know, obviously we're only a quarter of the way through the season, but we're a quarter of the way through the season now. And the Blue Jays have not played very good baseball. Blue Jays get a win on Monday night. You even heard Schneider, their manager, and some of the players in the clubhouse after the game talking about this being a big win in their eyes, you know, that they got on Monday night, thinking that, you know, that was the kind of game that they haven't been winning. And lo and behold, they had a great opportunity on Wednesday on a day when the Orioles leave 11 on base, 0 for 10 with runners in scoring position. They get a leadoff home run from Jordan Westberg and then nothing in terms of putting any runs across the board. And Adley Rutschman does what he does, which was hit in the clutch again. And
every minute we mention, I mean, I go back through our YouTube here and through Baltimore Positive. I think in 45 days they've been playing baseball, right? Maybe about that long, maybe, you know, 6 weeks. We have at various points talked about six of their guys being their best player for that minute, right? Colton Cowser, best player. Gunnar Henderson, got to sign him. Oh, my God, this Westberg guy, Bobby Grich. And by the way, Palmer compared him to Bobby Grich, and I don't want to just say that Palmer's smarter than me because he is, and you could ask him, ask anybody. But he compared him to Bobby Grich, and I have been saying Rich Dower, and it is funny. Like, he's right. It's Bobby Grich. But Rutschman always has been the apple of your eye, right? Like, you know, of all, he was the first guy that came up, and I think that first summer you're like, oh, my God, he's good. And then you don't sit around and say, oh, my God, he's good anymore, right? Like, literally. And oh, my God, he's good, right?
Oh, I mean, look, Gunnar Henderson has become the guy. When you're talking about someone who's on pace to hit 40 home runs and maybe be a 10 wins above replacement kind of guy, which Cal Ripken is the only guy who's done that in Orioles history, to give you a nerdier stat, just to show you what kind of great player Cal was in his prime. You know, whenever you hear the stray person that tries to be dismissive about Cal and say, oh, he's all about the streak. He wasn't that. No, he was a phenomenal baseball player for a long, long time. But Gunnar Henderson is doing things that conjure memories of that, you know, playing shortstop and being that kind of an offensive player. I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com just a couple days ago that it's come to the forefront a little bit here recently, because obviously Rutschman homers in three straight games, hits the walk-off home run on Wednesday afternoon. But look at his stats. And early on, he didn't hit for a ton of power. I think we mentioned that at the very least. But you look at him, 300 average. He's now on pace to hit over 30 home runs. He's on pace to drive in right around 100 runs for a catcher. That is remarkable. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable. And it really reinforces why Brandon Hyde is so reluctant to give him full days off. You want his bat in the lineup because it is that good. It's not just a good bat for a catcher, which is what you typically say about even the best catchers in baseball on an annual basis. It is a really good bat, period. So we see that once again on Wednesday, where he hits a ball that just a towering drive off the bat. I'll be honest with you, I thought it has a chance to maybe bounce off the wall. It's
he didn't
the short
get
portion,
all of it, right?
Right?
I mean, yeah, he didn't hit it square.
I mean, he hit it. I don't even know if I'd say he didn't hit it square. He hit it so high. The launch angle was so high that you just wondered, is that going to carry out? You know, it wasn't the warmest day. It wasn't cold on Wednesday, but it wasn't 85 degrees and humid. It gets over the fence, gets over the out of town scoreboard, and just one of those games, especially on the heels of that bottom of the eighth inning, which was one of those what the heck did I just see kind of innings. Adley Rutschman gets the job done for the Orioles. They avoid a sweep. Yes, they keep the regular season streak alive. It was a 2-year anniversary, I guess, of the last time they actually had been swept, you know, right before he made his major league debut. So just a wild game. One of those games that we've talked about on a number of occasions going back to last year. One of those games where it feels like you didn't deserve to win. I mean, point blank, when you do what the Orioles did offensively on Wednesday, which was they got guys on base. You know, it's not as though they didn't get any hits.
But Urias hit back. Get me started, right?
Well, I mean, I'm not shocked by that. The James McCann safety squeeze and Brandon Hyde considered pinch hitting O'Hearn for him in that spot, but he knew they'd go to a lefty. They initially put on a safety squeeze there, which on the first pitch, I don't mind that. You know me, I'm not a big bunt guy in general, but I don't mind that on the first pitch, but they took it off. But McCann on his own decided to do it. And McCann, to be fair, is a good bunter, probably, you know, if not the best bunter on the team, certainly one of the best bunters on the team, which I know doesn't say much in this day and age, but it was just bizarre. You know, play at the plate, it's reviewed. It looked like maybe it was safe, but, you know, they didn't overturn it. And we kind of know what the threshold is for overturning calls in New York at this point. But just so much weirdness in that inning and so much second guessing of Hyde or pinch hitting this guy or not pinch hitting someone. And then Adley Rutschman makes everything go away, right? He makes everything okay. They don't get swept. The offensive struggles, which we've talked about it the last couple of weeks, they have not swung the bat nearly as well as they had been. It's real. And, you know, we could certainly get into some of the guys specifically that are really, really struggling. But Adley Rutschman makes it all elementary, makes it all less concerning when he does what he did in the ninth inning and hands Romano and the Blue Jays a loss. So just a wild baseball game. And we've talked about it. We started talking about this the second half of 2022. I mean, they're not blossoming. They've blossomed. Now it's just a matter of how long the bloom is going to stay. And it feels like it's going to be a really long time. You know, certainly they can get better in ways, but, you know, you're talking about a team that's, you know, they and the Yankees have duking it out for the AL East right now. So just a huge win, as huge as it can be in mid-May. Again, you don't want to make too much of it, but
well, they needed it.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and
just
they
one
love
of the
this streak thing over at Orioles.com. Yeah, I mean, and the fans eat it up, and Masson eats. I mean, like, I listen, I'm not the guy pissing on it. You're the one. I mean, like, I think it's remarkable, but I was in Arlington.
Yeah. I mean,
you know
look,
what I mean? Like, so it's just not some, it to me, it's a little tight. It'd be like some weird thing, like talking about John Harbaugh's preseason thing or something. Dude, you lost the AFC championship game. You ran the ball, you know, less than I have toes and pinkies. And you know, that's going to be what you are until you go to Kansas City and have to figure it out again. And as an underdog and like all, you know, all on the road, like all of that stuff. The streak thing to me is fascinating. I love that they bring it up. I love pinching you on it. And I hope it never ends. I hope it never ends. But I hope it doesn't end with them losing a series in October again. And we're sitting here talking about 219 series. And, you know, as Dave Muir would always say, and a nude ring finger.
Yeah. No, let me be clear. I mean, I don't want to say I'm feigning outrage about it, because it does. There is something about it that annoys me from the standpoint of all we ever want to talk about in terms of legacy is postseason, not just in baseball, in sports in general. We talk about legacy, but it feels like this is one of those situations where we don't want to talk about it when it's not convenient to some other talking point that we like, right? It's way more important and always was more important than the preseason streak. These games matter. These series matter. They do. There's no question about it. It was remarkable over the course of last year, dating back to the Adley Rutschman's debut the year before that. But when you do get swept, whether it's the regular season or the postseason, I can't ignore it and just keep going on my merry way talking about the streak. So I get it. It's regular season versus
postseason.
You know
what the best part is? If they string this out in our 6-8 weeks, I'm going to get shtick out of this with you. I hope the damn thing doesn't get lost in a week when we're not working, like next week or your week you're on vacation in July. But, like, I hope it lasts forever. So a couple things. Because I write down these notes when you and I really take a deep dive and the team takes a day off. We were going to do a segment at Fadley's and we're not. I could really – every Friday at Fadley's, you and I could just take on a topic like bunting. Or, you know, just like Sig Meidel did 15 minutes with Jim Palmer. And other than him being relatively socially awkward and it not being his thing, as Vinny Testaverde would say in my 25th anniversary documentary, sitting and talking about things, you know, all of it's remarkable to me. And honestly, being thrown out and you being in our press seat, me sitting here watching it on TV, I get a vantage point you don't even get. You know, you didn't get to watch it. So I get to hear what the organization is saying and what's important to them. And the growth mindset hits me, right? Because, and I'll, you know, full disclosure, I know of Sig Meidel because Eric DaCosta pronounced his name for me. and he and Mike Elias, it's now sort of known when they're hanging out in draft rooms, but there was a long-standing relationship there where Eric loves baseball and was trying to learn analytics. And he and I were flying somewhere together, and we often did. He often would fly in away from the team, and he and I would wind up on a flight and hang out together, and I'd see what book he's reading, and we'd talk about life, kids, things. Never who his draft picks were. Like, I just, it like never came to that. It just wasn't the basis of what we did. But Sig Meidel's name came to me, and I went down to the Barnes & Noble. He gave a speech when he first came in, and I'm fascinated by part of it, not as nerdy as you are, but my dad was you. Like, you, my dad would love you. My dad would love your part of the show. He'd hate other parts, but he would love your part. And if my dad were alive and you guys were hanging out, you'd be nerding it all up. And I see the nerdier part come, and I'm nerdy enough that I want to learn and be better at it. And when I see smart people, Sig Meidel the other day trying to explain math to children and have people out. I mean, this is the stuff that I would, you know, love to praise them about and talk about, but they're so good at it. And the growth mindset and Astro Ball and Evan Drellick, who's been on this program many times, and all of that came to me the minute Elias got hired. I wanted to go read all of this stuff, right? So did you. And the growth mindset and the emerging baseball player, and for you to even say Rutschman early on, you wondered about his power. We still wondered about Matt Wieters, right? Like, I mean, we would compare them and say Maurer with power, Johnny Bench, you know, whatever they're supposed to be. But a 1-1, and we could talk to BJ about that as well, who, you know, was going to be a catcher, shortstop, and he could have played anywhere. He's a great baseman, great athlete, right? But the emerging part of these players, all of them get better. And that's the part of it for me. And I don't mean this to be mean, but I'm going to pick on a player because, you know, I haven't watched as much baseball the last 10 years, and I'm watching more now. The Vogelbach guy comes up, and he's got an interesting Terry Forster body, and I always love Matt Stairs, and I love Boog Powell. You know, I love the big guys, right? I love, I love the catcher in the Bad News Bears better than even Tanner Boyle. So I started just Googling the stats. I'm like, this guy, I've seen this guy other places, and I look at his career, and it's like, sort of weirdly, and I'll make fun of Dave Kingman or Mark Reynolds or Gorman, you know, guys that can hit home runs that don't do like a whole lot of other things and aren't glove guys, which is where, dude, Heston Kerstad's going down an angle that, you know, really limits your career at that point, right? But I look at what other teams are putting out onto the field and saying, we got a guy that we know can't hit 280. We got a guy we know might get on base. We got a guy that we know has – all of these guys are like, if they're not five tool, they're sixth sense. That even if you don't run well, you think well. And to see every day we're talking about how good all these guys are. I keep saying to my wife, doesn't matter what this Rubenstein guy does, Ruben Splash, doesn't matter whether I get a price, doesn't matter what they do with their television, no matter how bad their digital, they have a great, great, great baseball team. And if you love baseball and you've been waiting your whole life for the players to be good and not to be jerks, how can you not love Adley Rutschman? He was your first love. How can you not love Gunnar Henderson coming up? Even if you weren't paying attention or asleep when Hayes and Mullins were playing and Mountcastle and these guys and Santander, even when you pronounced it Santander, this is a beautiful thing, dude. They're emerging baseball players. And every day we're talking about all of them making all of them better. And in games when they're supposed to lose and they all stink, Captain America steps up and hits a bomb and says, top that, take a day off, let's go down to Fells Point. We'll get back after it on Friday. I mean, like, this is the team we've all dreamed of, Luke. I mean, I just want to say that out loud. I don't say it a lot, but it's true.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I mean, the idea of a growth mindset isn't anything brand new by any stretch of the imagination, but when it's, you know, an all-encompassing philosophy that goes through so many different things, you know, in terms of traits and a profile of what you want in players, character, just being having one message throughout the minor league system, using technology, using all the data, but also understanding that there's a human being behind that data and really trying to make sure you identify quality human beings. And look, we don't know all these players intimately, and that's always the caveat whenever we're talking about players and what they're doing on the field. We don't know who they are truly off the field. But the point is, all of that stuff matters to them. And I think even with some of the veteran signings they've made over the last few years, when you talk about Rougned Odor and Robinson Chirinos and last year Adam Frazier and Kyle Gibson last year, Jordan Lyles a couple years ago, you go through that list of guys, and some of those signings didn't really align necessarily with where they were in terms of, you know, a statistical profile, or whether they were the best player for the job. In the case of Adam Frazier, you know, two off seasons ago, where I think a lot of people, myself included, really shrugged at that, but they were looking at some of those guys from an intangible standpoint, where, you know, you think of analytics, you think of all the different ways that we think about the game now that are far different than we did for a really long time. That would almost be counterintuitive, but that was getting into some of the qualitative aspects of a player, and you know what they mean to a clubhouse, you know what they mean from a character standpoint, what they mean from a mentoring standpoint. And you know, they haven't batted 1,000, but they have batted at such a high clip when you look at it across the board, other than going out and spending a bunch of money. And obviously David Rubenstein's going to be a big part of that in the coming years, whether that's going to happen or not. But they've done so well. And look, is Adley Rutschman the best example of it? No, because there are 30 teams that would have drafted Adley Rutschman 1-1, or, you know, let's say, okay, there may have been a few who would have taken Bobby Witt, and Bobby Witt's worked out really well for the Royals. So let's be fair there. But point is, Adley Rutschman was very close to being a finished product when he was at Oregon State and was this star baseball player. That said, he still fit the mold of what they were looking for, with the growth mindset, with the traits and the baseline talent, with all of that. And, you know, they honed him, they tweaked him.
By the way, I'm smiling at you because you said he was a finished product. My whole point is, he's not a finished product.
But he was already a guy that you viewed as, okay, this guy's going to be, he's the next big thing, right? He's a can't miss. So he is a next can't miss guy
because he's never going to stop getting better. Like, literally, what you see isn't what you're going to get. It's going to even be better than that. I mean, that's what Cal Ripken was.
No question about it. But I guess my point is, and this is where I want to give them credit beyond just the fact that, okay, well, they picked Adley Rutschman because the 2018 team was just so horrendous, you know, the worst team in franchise history. But that's where you look at Gunnar Henderson, who was a second round pick. That's where you look at Jordan Westberg, who's now blossoming into what looks like an all-star caliber player. He was a end of the first round, you know, that next, you know, competitive balance, whatever it was. But point was, just about every team in baseball could have drafted those guys and developed those guys. And not only did the Orioles draft them and identify them as talented players, not only did they sign them, not only did they develop them into major leaguers, but they're now, in the case of Gunnar Henderson, an MVP candidate. In the case of Jordan Westberg, you know, guy who has been their second or third best player, and looks like he could be an all-star caliber player. So when you're not just when you're hitting it out of the park, drafting in the top five, as the Orioles did for a few years there, but you're also drafting guys later on and you're developing them and they're blossoming into major leaguers that are either above average or winning awards, man, it speaks so favorably to your process. But that's why I mentioned the Odors and the Chirinos type players that they've also brought in and said, you know what, this guy isn't the best player at his position by any stretch of the imagination, but we think that that guy's going to help us in some way.
Who was the guy they brought in 6 weeks ago for 5 minutes from the A's?
Tony Kemp.
Yeah,
he wasn't here long enough to really make.
No, but I'm saying they brought him in because he fit the suit of, like, he'll be good for us for a week or two. And he said beautiful things. I mean, I'm just saying.
He's a high character person. But the point is, they brought in some guys where you would just say, okay, that's fine, I guess. And, you know, not all those guys played at a very high level. I mean, Rougned Odor had some clutch moments, but he had a lot of moments where you're wondering why he's playing, because he wasn't that good. But you listen to some of those younger guys who've now matured over the last couple of years. Not that, you know, not that Gunnar Henderson at age 23 is a full-blown grown-up, right? But you hear some of those guys talk and they'd say, yeah, Odor and Chirinos and Adam Frazier, like, those guys helped me. You know, that doesn't mean that they were everything to their development, but they helped them along the way. And that, again, that's part of a growth mindset. That's part of, you know, wanting to fully develop these guys and recognizing that there are intangibles, there are elements beyond analytics that you can't quantify. Team chemistry is a great, you know, we hear that all the time. You know, what breeds, you know, does chemistry breed winning or does winning breed chemistry? Point is, that's a factor that is there. You can't quantify it, but you know it's there. So you do have to try to account for that. And that's why they've elected to bring in some veteran players like that. Now, you know, now it's a little bit different because you have homegrown guys top to bottom. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Ryan O'Hearn throughout this because we see what kind of player he's become. I mean, he's better this year than he was last year. I'll give you this, Nestor. I guarantee you don't know this because I didn't know this until a few days ago looking at the numbers. In this day and age where we think about swing and miss, right? Strikeouts. I mean, strikeouts have been on the rise for a long time now. And you think about, you know, someone like Gunnar Henderson, who's one of the best players in the American League. Look how many times he struck out. You know, he's going to strike out 160 times, 170 times, whatever it ends up being, you know, if not a little more than that. Ryan O'Hearn has walked more than he has struck out so far this year. Think about that. I mean, that is such a rare profile in the modern game. And even the Orioles this year, we haven't talked about it a lot, and it's come to the forefront a little bit more the last couple of weeks. Their walk rate is down. You know, they have slugged at a higher rate, but they have walked at a lower rate. And I think that will normalize some as the year goes on. But even someone like Adley Rutschman, who drew walks his first couple of years, go look at his walk rate. It's really down, but he's slugging 509. So I think, and this is, the Orioles would view this as proprietary, so they certainly would not get into it, even if you try, and people have tried, and you know, you kind of just get a non-answer about it.
Well, the questions were couched. Every question was Sig was, well, we don't want you to give anything like you would anyway, right? Like, it's very clear how secretive they are. And he told, the first thing he said is, well, I worked at NASA. I'm like, you ain't getting anything out of this guy.
But exactly. Yeah. But the point is, I really do think this more aggressive approach that we've seen has been deliberate. Now, people will say, okay, the last couple of weeks, they've tailed off offensively. So maybe there's a sweet spot that you have to find here. And I think, you know, I think you'll see guys draw walks over the course of the year. I think Adley Rutschman's walk rate will go up as pitchers try to adjust to how the Orioles are trying to attack the opposition. But it's been noticeable that their walk rate has dropped. Their slugging is up. And I will say, in fairness to them, even though their walk rate has dropped and they've been a little more aggressive, you know, in that way, it's not as though their strikeouts have, you know, gone way up either. So it's just, they've been more aggressive within the strike zone. I think they're hunting their pitch more. And look, when you've led the American League in home runs and runs for a good portion, most of the season to this date, it's, you know, it's tough to argue with it. So I'm fascinated to see how it evolves and how it regresses one way or the other, perhaps as we get deeper into the summer. But there's an example of a team that's evolving. And to your point, whether it's getting better or attempting to get better. And that's not to say that everything you do is going to work out all the time, but they're clearly continuing to look for an edge and they're clearly looking for ways to get better, and they'll adjust if they need to. And they, again, maybe they need to adjust and become a little more patient because the last couple of weeks they haven't gotten on base enough and haven't scored enough runs. But it's fascinating to watch this. And when you get a game like Wednesday, where so much goes wrong, you leave so many men on base, you fail so much with runners in scoring position, you have a bottom of the eighth inning that made my head hurt from a strategic standpoint.
And then, an execution standpoint.
Right, and then your all-star catcher comes up in the bottom of the ninth and makes it all okay. You know, and he's not the first. I mean, Jordan Westberg has walk-offs.
Walk it off. Let's all feel good about each other here. Yeah, we didn't get swept, Luke. Did I bring that up?
Exactly. They did not get swept. Right. So, I mean, it's just it. But again, even with my ranting about that streak, I mean, we are talking two calendar years now that they have not been swept in the regular season. As much as I'm over the mental gymnastics to completely ignore what happened in Arlington, it is still wildly impressive. You know, even if you just want to say, okay, they're at, I think the streak's up to 105 consecutive regular season series.
That's all.
So let's say it. Let's say it, including the postseason, they have only been swept once in 106 series, postseason or regular season. That's still unbelievable when you think about it, knowing what baseball is. It's not football where you might go 14-2 every year. You know,
has every team been swept already in baseball?
I don't know that, but I guarantee.
Oh, you Mr. Nerd, you and Jason. Oh, Stark.
I mean, that's not.
Come on, go look that one up for me.
Have the Yankees been swept?
Well, my question would be like when my dad brought those pool cards home. I never understood, or what's the football knockout game where you pick every week until, you know, like
the survivor pool.
Survive,
yeah.
Right? Okay,
yeah.
So like that would be the survivor thing of saying how important is this streak? Well, the Orioles has gone 100 game, and most, you know, every team's been swept by the All-Star game every year since 1990. Yeah. You know, whatever. I there's got to be some stat for that for you. I'll call Chris Pike. I'll put him on it.
I mean, I'm looking at their post-game notes right now. They're currently tied with the 1903 through the 1905 New York Giants for the third longest streak, regular season, of course, in Major League history. I mean, John McGraw, Christy Mathewson. I mean, you start throwing out names like that over 100 years ago.
But do you look back at the Yankees team, or even like the Mariners team that won 100, you know, whatever, 18, whatever it was, and say they went the whole year without getting swept? I mean, that just making it one season, I wonder how many teams make it a season without getting swept, or make it to the All-Star game, right now I would think that way more than half the league's been swept at least once.
Yeah.
They play two-game series.
Easily. And that's the thing. I mean, I was just going to say, and obviously back in the day, you didn't see as many two-game series, but and they're not that common, but they happen enough. And, I mean, this week was a perfect example. You get a rain out, then suddenly a three-game series becomes a two-game series. I mean, that's how easy it was going to happen to the Orioles, right? I mean, they were going to be swept. And, look, there were going to be a lot of people that were going to make a big deal about it.
But Adley Rutschman also has the strange, I've never been swept thing too, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's... Gunnar Henderson's never been swept, and Jordan Westberg's never been swept, right? I mean, it's wild. And let me be clear for everyone that I'm being, you know, old man yells at cloud, you know, get off my lawn kind of deal.
You're too young to be an old man.
If they had been swept on Wednesday, you know what else I would have said? Thank goodness we're not talking about this streak that's not really a streak anymore to that magnitude. But you know what else I would have said? It's okay. They've lost three in a row. The world's not ending. I would have said that as well. So there is the flip side to that they are going to get swept at some point. I hope the next time's not in October again. Let me be very clear about that. But again, in all seriousness, it is remarkable. It is a testament to, one, just how darn good this team is, and two, that they get into these spots, and like Wednesday afternoon, where so much had gone wrong, and then one of their best players comes up and makes an entire afternoon of a lot of stink, a lot of stench go away with one swing of the bat. So really, hats off to Adley Rutschman. And, you know, this team is just, you know, you said, what's funny, I don't know if you noticed it on social media. You made a comment, you made a reference to this team, ... Moments later, I said the same thing without even seeing that. This team, you know, it's just, there is something about this team that, you know, the long way to go, very long way to go.
I turned down 8 free box seats in the fifth row for Thursday's game or Wednesday's game. I looked out the window. It was like 11:30. It was raining. It was 58 degrees. And I'm like, I got work to do. And honestly, Palmer was calling the game, which is cool. And Garceau was doing the pregame. And, you know, I was Garceau's intern. I should have put that in the video. I didn't put that in the video. I was Garceau's intern. Did you know I was Garceau's intern?
I feel like you've mentioned it to me before, but would that be in the forefront of my memory if I was reeling off things about you? No. That rings a bell that you've told me.
Now that we've
me,
done a documentary, yeah. Maybe I should do a book, huh? Yeah, I got other things to do right now, but I'm writing my Northern Lights piece. Do you even know what I did with the Northern Lights this weekend?
I know you went out to Washington, right?
Do you know if I saw the Northern Lights or not?
I feel like you said you didn't.
Well, if I did, do you think you would know about it by now?
Yeah, so you didn't. You went all the way out there and you still didn't see it.
Well, there is the shame of that. Stop shaming me, all right, for that. I feel bad enough.
You asked me. You brought it up.
I actually did a really long segment with Wendy Bronfine from Curio Wellness about it. First off, it's the inside joke of, you know, there's a flower strain called Northern Lights, right? But more than that, it's the back thing, the back balm, the move that, because I said, we chased the Northern Lights. I'm like, we sat in a plane, we sat in a car, we slept in a hotel, we sat in a restaurant, we had huckleberry pancakes to honor my father. It was delicious. We cable carred around, we flew home. I sat some more. You know this from back in the era when I used to have a press pass, like sitting was really hard for me when my back was killing me. So like all I did was sit. So I had this move product and I told her the story on the air, and I am 80% of the way through writing a relatively humorous, and dude, it was one of those things, took a couple days for me to my back to organize, get back on the yoga mat. Thank you, Planet Fitness, get me in shape. Dr. Steve working me out. I got to get ready for the Crab Derby on Friday down at Fadley's. And this move product, like it's, you know, I said my dad used to use Absorbine Junior. He smelled like BO, it was awful. This doesn't, and it feels nice. And I said, it wore me out going to the Northern Lights. But the whole story is, I hope you read it. I'm going to finish writing it. I'm going to put it up this weekend because you do know it's like the quest of my life, right? It's like my bucket list thing. I don't talk to you in terms of any other bucket. I don't even know what my second bucket list thing. Oh, tulips in Amsterdam. I want to do that. And there's places I want to go again and things that, but you know, Northern Lights is number one, which is why we were, I used all the playoff airline points that you and I would usually use in October. I used them in Spokane the other night. So, you know, all my points are gone. But it was a wild experience. And I will write about it. And you will laugh at it, hopefully. I know I laughed writing it. Because you know what I've thought? Just off the cuff, when my wife and I are upside down in an airport hotel room checking in at 5:30 in the morning, having spent the whole night looking out the dashboard over Loon Lake, Google Loon Lake, Washington, outside of Spokane, 45 minutes from the Canadian border. Nothing but beautiful. I mean, it was like the most beautiful, romantic. And then the Northern Lights didn't come. So at 5 in the morning, we're checking this hotel. And all I could think about, Luke, was my career. And to some degree, Chad Steele, Greg Bader, Kevin Byrne, you, former employees of, we played a night game in Bemidji and Monday Night Football, and the game ended at 1, and we were in the locker room till 2, and we did radio till 5, and they got their ass kicked, right? Which happens a lot on the road with the Ravens. Yeah. I didn't, and I went in and out to Denver to see them get their ass kicked, or I went out to San Diego and leverage. I had more fun in San Diego. So I don't want to implicate San Diego. Friggin' Cleveland, Cincinnati. How about an ass kicking in the rain on a Thursday night where I flew into Louisville up all night? Marvin wants me to come over and drink champagne at 1 o'clock in the morning. And Marvin's gonna be making a cameo this week, by the way, around here. We lost. And I'm upside down. I'm pissed. We're 6-4 or something really awful. And somebody got hurt, and I got to go do radio, and my employees are pissed, and my sponsors are mad, and I didn't feel the least bit bad about it. And I thought to her, I'm like, this is just like we went to Spokane and lost a football game. If the Terps played in Washington State, you know what I mean? Like, you get an apple, you ride the cable car, you enjoy the sunshine, you go get some pancakes, and you lick your wounds. And you know what John Harbaugh would say? No one cares. Work harder. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to work harder to find the Northern Lights, Luke. Is that good? But that's not the full. The full story is way more comical than that.
I look forward to reading it.
And you know what's going to be interesting for you? Sig Jones, Luke Mydell. That's going to be your new nickname here. The scientist here. And if I ever get my press credential back and I'm welcome with open arms and I meet Sig Mydell in a a formal manner other than having them tell him that I'm a bad guy. I would mention this incredible science of this that I've learned. And I, you know, like even for my friends, like Marty Bass and I are very close in the real world. He always read the weather and he's really nerdy into all that stuff. And this, the forecasting model for the Northern Lights to be able to see it is only forecastable for 30 minutes. It can't be forecasted a day out, a week out, tomorrow, like the weather can be, right? You can look at the weather and say, you got it wrong. It's supposed to rain, you know, whatever. But we have models and there's science, as we all voted this week, hopefully for science. I did the science on this, right? I followed the science. You know what I mean? So like literally when you read it, I want you or anybody that hears this, because you like baseball and you're a nerd about the Northern Lights, I followed the science and that's what led me to Spokane. So the reason that I, this would be like betting on the favorite and getting beat. You know what I mean? Like that's what happened. There was a 90% chance, Luke, of seeing the Northern Light. That's all I'm going to say. Science told me there was a 90% chance.
90% is not 100%, so.
This is why they go to the casino up in Hollywood. Luke Jones is here. He's Baltimore Luke. He's tired of my Northern Lights story. We're going to talk of something even more irrelevant. Ravens scheduling and how they're screwing us, Luke. Especially around Christmas time. Netflix. I got your Netflix. You know what? I do got your Netflix right here. My wife actually has Netflix. I'm Nestor. We are WNST. We hope to see you Fadley's on Friday. Stick around. It'll only get worse.